Permanent Committee on Veterans and Emergency Preparedness will come to order. Madam Vice Chair?
I think that a song needs to be sung today. Peggy, your wife, is talking to me, and I think Representative Meek, would, if you could come forward, please.
Yes, Senator, thank you. Chair Boquist, Senator Monis Anderson. Should I sit or stand? Does it matter?
We're at your pleasure.
I'll
stand. You're the upper chamber. You're from the chamber of the people. So
wonderful.
We're just humble senators here waiting for you.
Well, thank you. This is a wonderful day. It's Oregon's birthday, but it's also Valentine's Day. And Chair Boquist, I just want to let you know that your dear, beautiful wife commissioned me to sing a Valentine gram for you.
Oh, man.
In honor of Valentine's Day, and this is a very special cause, I've been singing Valentine grams for years and years now, almost 10 years, for my Relay for Life team for the American Cancer Society, and I've raised up to thousands of dollars in one day. And so today I was kind of feeling sad, wasn't going to be able to do that, but the great House and Senate have been very supportive, and I've been singing Valentine grams in between committee meetings all day and lunch.
And but, in committee meetings now.
And, obviously, yes. So I appreciate this. It's going to take about probably a minute and a half, but here we go. Well, it's Valentine's Day, and there's no better way to say that I love you than with a song. So please listen along as I sing you this song with this message on Valentine's Day. I've got sunshine on a cloudy day. When it's cold outside, I've got the month of May. Well, I guess you'd say, what can make me feel this way? My guy, talking about my guy, happy Valentine's Day.
No.
You may bring the. Hey, there. How much money did we raise for this now?
There goes your hard guy image right down the drain.
Thank you, Senator. Thank you, Senators. You guys have a wonderful day, and thank you, Senator President.
This is twice for you, entertaining, Mr. President. You've done this twice today, entertaining our members from the House.
Maybe we got to come up with a song for Peter next week.
Madam Vice Chair, do you have something else?
No,
is there another ambush?
I didn't know
they taught ambushes in the Air Force. I thought, you know, it didn't work that way. Okay, colleagues, after that diversion from reality, we have two public hearings today. Our good senator is here. Do you want me to open both of them at the same time?
That'd be fine.
Okay, so we're going to open, because it's coming, and it's from Senator Riley, and he has two separate bills, but I'm going to go ahead and open them both at the same time so we can stay at the podium, and so we'll do that. We'll open a public hearing on Senate Bill 129 and Senate Bill 130. If you want to come up to the podium, counsel, do you want to give us any background, or you want to let Senator Riley go solo?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senator Riley. Senate Bill 129 creates a task force on post-traumatic stress disorder to study and recommend improvements in diagnosis and treatment of veterans in particular, and identifying funding sources. It specifies the composition of the task force and requires a report by September 15, 2018. Declares emergency effective on passage.
So, Mr. Chair, committee members, my name is Chuck Riley. I'm a state senator for District 15, Hillsborough, Cornelius, Forest Grove, Roy, Verbort, and a bunch of farms. And it's my pleasure to bring you this bill to create a task force to study PTSD in Oregon. It's a big problem. We have a lot of veterans who have this problem. We have over a quarter of a million veterans in Oregon, and about 30% of them suffer some form of PTSD. And we really don't have much in the way of help for these folks. And this is just a start to figure out where we want to go, how does this affect our population, and what can we do about it? And I think it's very needed, and I hope that you will pass this bill. So that's 129. Do you want me to do these separately? Yeah, go ahead.
Mr. Chair, members of the
give
committee.
Give the good senator a crib.
Senate Bill 130 provides free medical marijuana registry identification cards for veterans with disability ratings of 50% or more from active duty for those discharged under other than dishonorable conditions.
So again, Senator Chuck Riley, and this one, I had some, about five constituents come to me to talk about this. They actually came in two different groups, so I had several people who really need this for their medical needs, and I promised them I'd bring this bill and fight for them to help get this through for them. It's simple bill. It just gives a fee waiver for those veterans with at least 50% disability. And there are those veterans who really, really need this, especially for pain relief. So that's the bill. And I hope that you guys will pass this along.
Senator, I just want a clarification for the record. Typically, when the drafters draft these, on page 3 at the bottom and over on the top of page 4, it actually, the end of that sentence talks about who this would be applied to, and it's active duty military service who have received a discharge or release other than dishonorable conditions. And that's a fairly generic term we use for identifying any discharge that's not dishonorable. Is that your intent?
It is, and that it would include medical discharges with honorable conditions. And there are a lot of those around, those medical discharges, and that's especially the folks that I'm interested in. But anyone who doesn't have that dishonorable condition, I think should be eligible.
Okay, I would just clarify that point because some people get it confused when we start listing the exact types, and it's basically a generic legislative council term that means if they have a discharge, any of the statutory, federal statutory discharges that aren't dishonorable would qualify. Madam Vice Chair, questions on either bill?
Well, I certainly would like to know what's already being done in the medical. I hate silos, and I truly believe that we've been coordinating health care and trying to coordinate our mental health and our physical health and our drug addictions, etc. And I don't know, post-traumatic stress is definitely a disorder, a mental health disorder, and I just need to know where the health care community is on that and how the VA's handling it, if they do, how the coordinated care organizations that many of our vets participate in is. So it's a big issue, and I just don't have any knowledge.
Do you want to comment, Senator, before I start instructing staff?
So I really don't know the answer to that question, and that's part of what this task force is to get at is there are so many different organizations who look at various pieces of this, and I think it does need to be coordinated, and I don't believe that we have one group that looks at this from all angles, and that's part of the point.
I'm not a healthcare expert, Madam Chair, Vice Chair, as you know. If we directed staff to reach out and see if we can get some additional input, and right now there's no one else signed up, but I'm sure people are going to come up. Help me out. Are we going to reach out to OHA? Who should we be reaching out to?
Public health.
Public health at OHA.
To see
And we can drag the director up here, who's mad at me because of my testimony earlier today, but that's okay, and ask him to try and reach out, them to reach out to the federal side. But I would think federal VA is one approach,
right.
You know, whether they're doing public health, OHA. Can you think of other people we would reach out to?
Maybe OMA would know, since physicians deal with this, or the psychiatrists and psychologists. You know, I just don't know. It's a huge issue, but we're still trying to coordinate efforts on everybody. And when we have metrics, and I don't even know if where that falls on our metrics for coordinated care organizations, mm-hmm. I'd hate to have something very separated out from health care delivery in other venues.
Okay. Senator Olson, questions on either bill? Senator Courtney, questions on either bill? Okay.
So one more point, if I may, Mr. Chair.
We're indulging you. You saw we indulged representatives, so
right.
Our own chamber will even get more time to.
So on Senate Bill 129, which is what we're discussing at this point, it does have two referrals, so it doesn't end up in this. This is not the last place this goes. And I also have an amendment that will be put on this. In the second committee to get rid of the emergency clause.
Wow. Yeah, I was just noting that. It's the established a task force on post-traumatic stress disorder has a general government and accountability referral. I would have thought we would send it to healthcare, your committee, and ask the question. I'm not sure.
Mr. Chair, the reason it's going to that committee is because that committee is looking at all task forces to see if they should be task forces or if they should be downgraded possibly to a work group or some other way to do them. So all task forces are going to that committee.
Well, see, you're smarter than all of the members of the committee up here. So
it's probably his committee.
He is.
Okay. Well, Senator, please.
Thank you, Chair. I don't think a work group is necessarily a downgrading.
Point taken.
Okay. We'll take it into consideration. You heard the Vice Chair would like to get some more information on this other, and we'll reach out to those agencies and probably have another public hearing, and we'll make sure that you know when that is so you can come forth.
Appreciate it. Anything else?
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I have nobody signed up for either of these bills, Senate Bill 129 or Senate Bill 130. Is there anybody in the audience that would like to come forward on either of these bills that are out there? Please, if you would.
There's a $5 penalty for not signing up, Bill.
Donated to the charity from Representative Meek.
That's right.
Chair Bullcrest, I won't sing. For the record, Bill Clooney, Carpenters Industrial Council. If I may, I'll read a couple sentences from the previous Veteran Secretary, Bob McDonald. In 2014, when he took office in Washington, D.C., Congress seemed interested in Veterans Affairs. And he spent 2 years touring the whole country, picking up the facts and figures of what veterans need. And, quote, he got frustrated that Congress hasn't shown the same urgency since his first months in office in 2014. After a long summer recess and a month back in town, lawmakers depart again until after November elections, failing to pass a dozen initiatives he views as essential to sustain veterans' transformation. So you see, Chair Bullquist, committee, D.C. didn't help our veterans at all in the last 3 years. I urge the committee to pass any of these bills, any and all, to help our veterans. If Congress doesn't want to do it, Oregon's going to have to step forward and do it. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone else that wants to testify on SB 129 or 130? Does the department have any insights on either of these topics? Though
Some of it's a federal issue, but you're about the only person that the federal government talks to.
Chair Boquist, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Cameron Smith, the director of the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs. And while we opened up a hearing on both of these bills, they are largely separate. The one on the task force on post-traumatic stress, whether it's our Vietnam generation not welcomed home in their own time or the signature injury out of Iraq and Afghanistan, I'm always... there is certainly a need to better address post-traumatic stress and mental health for veterans and all their families and all Oregonians. I'm always hesitant to sign up for task forces or work groups, but they also are a great opportunity to get the collaborative partners together. We've had a great governor's task force on traumatic brain injury. The work that we've done on incarcerated veterans across the task force, sometimes it takes that task force to actually mesh together the partners to make sure we're collaborating across the silos, whether just of agencies or the other public-private partners. And just very briefly, separately on the medical marijuana side, I believe post-traumatic stress, and so again, separating those two issues, the task force and Oregon did add post-traumatic stress for all Oregonians to that list of medical conditions, I believe in 2014 for medical marijuana, but it was very hard to get data and research about whether it actually was effective as a treatment, given how the feds still treat marijuana under their regulations. Now we're beginning to see some of those studies beginning to get traction, but still a lot more to bear out. But we did, and I don't know the year, we have already had a significant fee. I mean, the bill in front of us is really just whether there should be a fee for those that are 50% disabled or above is the question for the legislature with the other bill. It's $200 for the medical marijuana card for all Oregonians. It's been reduced for all veterans that qualify for one of those medical conditions down to $20. And this simply will remove that $20 for those veterans that are service-connected disabled 50% or greater. And we can we've run some of the rough numbers about how many veterans are using the program today and will increase over the next biennium. And we can get OHA's perspective for future hearings on what the fiscal impact would be to the medical marijuana program with this reduction of the fee.
Okay. Thank you. Other questions? Senator, please.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Mr. Director, you probably know that for a long, long time I've opposed anything marijuana. I would like to know if you have any resources to tell us the impact of marijuana use by veterans, be they disabled or requiring medical marijuana, what the impact of their life is. I'm not totally sold that it's medicine, and if you could help me understand what the necessity is, I would appreciate it.
So Chair Boquist, Senator Olson, members of the committee, I don't know that we have any specific data, but we do in terms of what are those impacts, but we are seeing a significant use. I mean, we are able to say how many veterans are signing up for medical marijuana cards, and it seems like it's increasing faster than Oregonians as an overall population. And it does raise those concerns to make sure that we aren't creating more problems when we're trying to solve them.
Thank you.
Madam Vice Chair, who regulates the medical marijuana card? Is it, you're the health?
Health authority.
Does it? Council, if you'd be kind enough on to reach out, and Ella, I'm looking at this, and the dear director, you know, jumped into the breach here, but Oregon Health Authority, Human Services, obviously, and Health Director of Human Services, along with Public Health, would obviously be impacted. If you could reach out to them and ask for input that they could give back to us, and you could distribute to the community, the committee members, since their names are specifically cited on there. So generally, you get an agency coming up and saying, you know, hey, we're in, we're out, or something like that, and they're sort of absent at the moment. And with that, is there, I see sort of a hand down there. Is that, you have another question?
No, I was just pondering.
Pondering. Senator Courtney, any questions?
Oh, when would I talk about task force?
You can talk about task force right now.
Okay. So we cannot study or analyze or evaluate the post-traumatic stress disorder now. And I'm going to be careful how I say this. I They don't like task force. We have a committee structure that I believe very much in. Invariably, when you say we're going to do a task force, what they do, if they are able to come together, is going to come back to the legislature. Therefore, on every task force, I want a legislator embedded. I think it's very important. I have 30 state senators. I have senators, they just say, Peter, I can't do all this. They cannot do all these things. Plus, you're distant from the legislature when you do these task forces without the legislature. I'm a big believer in work groups. I really, really believe where the chair, we have a veterans committee here. It's sitting, you're sitting on. We have a chair here who can appoint a work group, which it's a nexus with us. It stays connected to this committee. And so I'll do whatever you want me to do on this task force. But, you know, we have so many task force out there, and I've grown to be feel it doesn't. You have such a dramatic committee system. You should use the work group where you can use it, because you can still have represented the Oregon Health Science University, OMA, different groups, with one of you who decides here. I'm just giving an example. Let me be on. I'll be the head of that. The chair says, all right, you go. And then that way we keep that. I'd much rather use that approach with this situation than just we'll create a task force. We'll put all these people on it, and they'll do this. So they'll get back to us whenever. And this is very serious stuff. This committee has worked harder than any committee I've served on regarding issues that have been assigned to it. And this issue is very serious. And I didn't want to say anything to the good senator, because ironically we talked yesterday in his chair's meeting about task force versus work groups. So I'm just going to say that. But I will defer to the three of you. If you want to know we want a task force, do a task force. But I don't think you should fear a work group, a serious work group that the chair says you will be on it, and you will report back to us at legislative days, et cetera, et cetera. I think there's a stature, it has credibility, and there's a seriousness there. Task force, well, they'll get back to us maybe next session. They'll get back to us, and we assume they're going to work together. So I didn't want to give you a long statement on it, but I'm going to tell you, we have way too many task force around here, and I have found work groups to be much more effective in dealing with issues, than anything else. But I'll do whatever you want to do, the director wants to do, whatever you want to do, but I'm not convinced it's a better approach than a hardcore work group that you say, I want you, Senator, you're going to be on it, and you're going to make it report back, and this is what I want done. That's just my philosophy.
So, Senator Courtney, you'd be willing to serve on this work group or designate another senator Senator Riley?
Well, I could do that, but may I speak, Mr. Chair? I'm watching these two senators to my left here, one of whom I saw did an extraordinary job on a work group regarding a Veterans Day holiday a few sessions ago. That was a work group. There's a perfect example. And, you know, for all I know, Senator Olson is chafing a bit. Would be, you're the chair. I'll do whatever you want me to do, but I'm not so sure you have to take it away from this committee since it's a veterans issue. You know, you could go to Senator Riley, show it. Yeah, that's fine with me.
Mr. Chair, I may need to amend my testimony if it's going to be a hardworking work group with Senator Courtney as chair. I have a lot of concerns.
He didn't say that. He didn't mention me being the chair of the committee.
So in sitting in the audience, sir, I didn't make that distinction between work group and task forces, and that was helpful. There is a lot of power to that work group structure to then feed into the continued work on a lot of other bills that do impact the issue we're trying to affect. We'd be happy to participate on either.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, please.
I would like to expand on what the good president talked about, because I've been on both work groups and task force. The first thing I noticed in a task force is that we as senators are not in charge. So the direction that the task force goes is where they want to take it. As a work group, it's our job to ferret out the information we need to have to provide vital statistics, information, etc., to the committee so that they can make a logical decision. And when we get into a task force, we kind of get off in space, if you will. But the work group that I was fortunate enough, I've chaired several, and one of them was 911, I was able to get the information we needed and put together what we had to have. And I think they're much more viable because we as the senators and on the committee can control the agenda and control where we go to get what we need. And I think we kind of get far afield when we get into a task force. Just my opinion. Not unless you want to make a work group or a task group.
And a task group.
A task group.
Okay, colleagues, we're going to roll Senate Bill 129 and 130 for a public hearing only next week. And Council, you will ask the Oregon Health Authority and Human Services to have a person present in the room for the purposes of discussing a task group. And I'm sure they will volunteer to come forth. If there's a problem, let me know, and we will ensure that they volunteer. Okay, thank you. With that, colleagues, we're going to close the public hearing on SB 129 and SB 130, and we're going to move on to an informational meeting only for a few minutes and ask WestCare to come forward if they would. What we're trying to do, colleagues, is while we have informational hearings or informational stuff coming up, is if we can fit them into our Tuesday schedule without going over, we're going to try and do that so we don't burn up our Thursday day, because I certainly have too many task forces already, too many committee assignments already, and too many extracurricular voluntold tasks. So with that.
And helping some of us get some bills out.
Yeah, thank you, madam, for reminding me of that one, too. Madam Chair, Madam Vice Chair, if you would, please.
Distinguished Chair and Madam Vice Chair, for the record, my name is John Lee. I am the Senior Vice President for the Northwest Region for WestCare Foundation. With me is Brenda Powers, a retired Army First Sergeant, a veteran of Afghanistan, and she is the current Program Director for our Transitional Housing Facility for Homeless Veterans on Center Street in Salem. For the record, if there is a task group, I'd like to volunteer for it. So that was a joke.
Or are you volunteering?
No.
I had the privilege of meeting with three of you during some of those icy snow days, and I
amazing.
Simply brought to your attention some of the work that has been done in this great state of Oregon by the WestCare Foundation in partnership with Lines for Life. In the last 2.5 years, we have been privileged with a grant from the Office of Rural Health to be servicing veterans in two rural counties of Oregon, Tillamook and Umatilla, to help them connect to their VA benefits and entitlements. About 7 months ago, we were able to collaborate with the Boise VA Medical Center and entered into a proof of concept in advancing telemedicine. So what we have discovered in the rural areas, both of Washington State and Oregon, is there's a heck of a lot of my generation out there, Vietnam-era veterans who have never asked the VA for anything. They are a long way from community clinics and VA hospitals. All of them are eligible for a VA pension. If you served during the Vietnam era and you are financially challenged, you are automatically eligible for a VA pension. I've had some conversations with the distinguished director from ODVA about this issue, and he too has a vision to make sure that all of our veterans in Oregon are connected to their VA benefits, which would be a great economic advantage. When you're looking at health care, when you're looking at transportation challenges, when you're looking at housing, and then those that are justice involved in the county jails, that is a great menu for serving veterans in the rural areas of Oregon. I'd ask you for the potential of creating budget language instructions to ask the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs to submit proposals and allow organizations like the WestCare Foundation to submit for services in the rural areas. That's the ask, and I respectfully request your participation in that for this 1.5% lottery funding that's going to be available on or about the 1st of July. I would just simply reiterate that one of our strongest partners is Alliance for Life. organization in Portland. They are a nationally recognized call center. They are the only now backup to the VA crisis line for suicide. They've been around about 25 years, and they would be the technology connection to the veterans and families in rural areas. I also want to point out that the advancement of telemedicine to these rural areas is a great, great benefit, and we will help do that with the VA's participation. It's almost like penicillin was back in the day. Subject to your questions, I am done. Go Army.
Go ahead, Madam Vice Chair.
Okay. I had the opportunity to meet with you in January, was it?
I remember it was icy.
It was icy, and that was in Gresham, and I couldn't believe that you came out there. And we did submit an LC. It's LC 4032, and I think we've dropped it.
Judy Cushing called me and told me you submitted it, so yeah. I appreciate that.
But I think you didn't share the statistics of what you have done in other states. That to me was sort of overwhelming on the success rates that you do have. And I am interested in talking about how it works and how many veterans were actually, participated and
sure.
Got into services and et cetera.
Well, it's a great, great question. In the two counties that we have operated in, only Umatilla and Tillamook, over the last 2.5 years, we have actually connected thousands of veterans and family members with VA stuff. I'll just categorize it as VA stuff. Let me talk about one veteran, my generation. This original grant wanted us to focus on the younger generation of veterans, those that had served in Afghanistan and Iraq. They're out there, but not in huge numbers. What we are finding is the majority of veterans out there that have never asked the VA for anything is my generation. They are now of age, they need health care, and we are signing them up for VA health care, which alleviates any cost to the state for that health care, and automatically, like I said, because of their financial challenges, they are eligible for about a $1,200, $1,300 a month pension, which is significant to that veteran and his or her family. So I think you have over 332,000 veterans in the state. Every time we are able to connect a veteran with VA stuff, you can imagine the benefit that that brings economically to that community and also takes some of the burden off the state because it saves Medicaid dollars, it saves other social services dollars, and the VA then becomes responsible for that.
Yeah, well, just a comment. It takes a community, you know, to raise a child. Well, it takes a community,
amen.
I think, to help our veterans.
Yes.
And I know that we have some good bills trying to help our veterans on college campuses, which is extremely important, and their role is to help them into services, not just in education. And I view that there's a lot of veterans that I have come in contact that aren't, they aren't hooked up with their VSO, and they aren't hooked up with education, and so it's a concept that I would like us to discuss. So, mm-hmm.
Senator Olson,
thank you.
Senator Courtney?
No.
I do have two additional suggestions because this particular topic arose earlier today when I was in the Subcommittee on Joint Ways and Means in regards to ODVA's budget, and Senator Johnson raised that same exact issue and Representative Gomberg. So if you haven't talked to Senator Johnson, by the way, I think Tillamook is half of her district.
Yeah.
And
Judy Cushing has, I know.
Yeah,
so.
And Representative Gomberg, you are missing the boat. So, or missing the landing craft, since the Army runs the landing craft.
Yeah.
So, you should probably reach out to the two of them additionally. And then I think, as we move farther through the policy process, what has the president of this chamber and the speaker of the House and the other chambers, as we get farther along in the Ways and Means process, reaches back to the policy committees, as the vice chair said, and asks us to, you know, kind of give them some guidelines of programs and spending areas and stuff like that. Now, some policy chairs take advantage of that opportunity provided by the presiding officers. This particular committee has, in every session we've been here, sort of prioritize what are the bills for spending and what are the funding sources that are out there. So it would behoove you to get additional information to the four members of this committee and to the members of the House Veterans Committee, too.
Yeah, I've been invited this Saturday to meet with the United Veterans organizations or United Veterans Groups of Oregon. They feel like they have some dog in this fight, so to speak, to advise the elected officials on how this lottery funding should be appropriated.
Any further comments? Thank you very much for your presentation.
Thank you for your time, Senator.
Folks, that concludes everything we formally have. Is there anyone in the audience that has public testimony or comments? I don't see anybody jumping up to race out and do anything. Colleagues, we're scheduled again next Tuesday. We're in oral 29 and 34 to see if we can structure that into a work group. But the easiest way is to make the agencies come to us instead of us go to the agencies. I'll also reach out to Senator Riley to see if, you know, his level of interest matches his level of participation, and then we'll sort of go from there. I would ask Madam Vice Chair just to stay behind for a couple of minutes when we come to it. Anything for the good of the order, Mr. President? Mm-hmm. Senator Olson?
No, but I'm afraid you're going to sing to the good Vice Chair.
So I'm going to leave quickly. I didn't bring a bucket with me because I couldn't carry my tune. But the only thing I can make sing is a rifle, okay? With that, we're done for the day. Thank you very much. With that, we're done for the day. Thank you very much. Make sing is a rifle, okay?